You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, all my kindreds out there, what's going on? I'm going to do a quick announcement of our sponsor, and then I've got something special for you guys today. But listen, and you ladies and everyone else out there. Today, let's announce our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, Senior Real Estate and Probate Service. Hi, Kevin. 818-571-1508. This man knows a lot about real estate, everything, how to put your life together, how to take it apart if you need to move, sell, buy, whatever. He has the answers. And he's a wonderful human being, which is why I talk and speak so highly of him. Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, is our sponsor, 818-571-1508. Now back to what we were talking about, kindred. So over the weekend, people, I had the privilege of hanging out with some people, and we were talking about personal relationships. So all of you out there that are going through personal relationship problems, whether with your family, friends, whatever your part of personal is, I wrote a song just for you. Now, this is the big public debut, so don't laugh and don't make fun of me, because this could be you. Okay, and I hope that Miss Tracy Chapman don't come for me, but they told me that I had 33 seconds without being bothered by the FIC, whoever's coming for people that do plagiarism online. Here we go. You had a fast car. I gave you love and a place to stay. And when I was down and out, you and your friends threw me some shade, but I told you to take a hike. Oh, I rolled on my city bike and rolled away. It's okay, because I don't play. So that's what I wrote for all of you out there in despair with your significant people. So now, drum roll for our guest today. I have the wonderful privilege of bringing to you someone that I've admired for many, many years. I never knew I'd ever have the chance to meet him. So you never know what might happen in life. A man of 1,000 impressions. You might already know who I'm about to say, but there's only one in this whole world that I can think of that can do that many and do them well, is comic impressionist 1,000. And he was a sketch artist. Rich Little. Hey! Woo!
Rich Little. My God, is he still alive?
He's still alive.
I saw him die one night at the Tropicana. You know?
Did you? So one thing I want to ask you. You forced me to watch. When I heard you were going to be on the show, I want to make sure that I had everything down pat. You know, I'm a pro. I want to be professional. And I watched all of the Dean Martin roast. What I want to say is, not only were they funny, what I want to ask you, do you miss the kind of humor from then till now? Because now it's all bad mouthing and it's a constant roast because people to talk about you and they're serious. They don't like you. You know, do you miss the subtle agitation of love that was brought to others in a roast? And
those roasts, they were pretty clean. You know, the roasts today they do on people are pretty dirty, you know, and they don't interest me at all. But those roasts that you watched, they stand the test of time. They really do. And I did 24 of them.
You were the longest running person on the Dean Martin roast that I was told, you know, that I ran.
Yeah. I did more roasts than anybody. And they never roasted me, though. That's interesting, isn't it?
I don't think anyone could do you the way you do other people. And as I thought about that, and I sat there and I watched you do all of those people, I'm like, how do you not lose yourself when you're bringing all of these different, their energies? You're literally kind of moving yourself out of the way, I'm assuming, and letting another personality emerge from a part of you. And that takes a great talent, and that's very creative. How does that happen?
Well, you know, the thing is, when you do impressions, sometimes in real life, you go into a voice and you don't realize it. Like somebody backed into my car the other day And I got out, and I was angry, and I went into Kirk Douglas. I said, wait a minute. You banged into my car, and you caused a dimple in my car.
And you just said it automatically. Nobody prompted you to do it, huh?
And then I cut somebody off one day in my car, and I rolled down the window, and I did my Paul Lynn. I said, I'm an idiot. They should put me in a home.
I love when you did him, though, because you really came out, you know, like, you know, like he was. And I know that, you know, I don't want you to do too much free because you earned your living and you deserve to be paid. So I'm not going to ask you to do too many, but maybe somebody as it comes in the conversation.
Well, you know, Paul Lynn was an interesting guy, you know, and I think the reason that he lasted so long was that he was so different. I mean, and he hated my impression, you know, Paul Lynn. Every time I did him on the Dean Martin roast or on the Tonight Show, he would say, oh God, who's that? That's disgusting. No. Get a day job.
So he didn't like it. He hated it. He hated my impression. Oh, see, and I think you did. Everyone that you did, you sounded point on, which is why I'm going to ask you at the roast. Were there ever, remember the thing that happened with Will Smith and Chris Rock a couple of years ago?
Now? Oh, yeah.
Was there ever a time that somebody got pissed off at somebody else at a roast and you got into it and the cameras didn't catch it or something?
I don't think so. Not really. You know, when Ruth Bussey used to hit Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra with her purse. The only thing they were worried about was her messing up their hair. That's all they were concerned about. They didn't care if they were clobbering her, hitting them in the face or anything. They were just trying to protect their hair.
So everybody expected to be off the chain, so nobody would personalize anything that somebody might say about them. Because when they did Lucille Ball, the look on her face was like, she was kind of like, okay, what are they going to say? You know, like she was like, oh, you know. So were you ever like that? Feeling like you couldn't say what you wanted to say?
No, I liked Lucille Ball quite a bit. I did her show and I heard about her. So I memorized all my lines before I went to the first reading. And that impressed her big time.
Oh, okay.
You know, because I knew she was a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And knowing all my lines at the first rehearsal was a big plus for me. I got along well with her. She was great. Loved her.
Who selects all of the people to do the roast? Because it has to be something in common with them or something they know about the person. How does that happen?
Well, the reason I did so many roasts was that if I could imitate maybe three or four people on the dais, then they put me on the roast.
Okay.
Because it's always great when I do somebody and then they cut to their face and they're either laughing or they're in bewilderment or whatever. But it's always great to see their reaction, you know? Mm-hmm.
And Dean Martin, did they self-fund all of the roasts themselves, or was it, Who helped put on the roast? Like, how did they get the money?
Well, you know, I don't know whether they charged at the MGM Grand to see the roast or not. I'm not sure about that, but they must have, I guess. I don't know. The network paid a lot of money for it, you know. It's interesting. Dean Martin was an interesting guy because he didn't have a care in the world. And I remember one time we were going from the dressing room out to sit on the dais and start the show. And as we're walking out, Dean turned to me and said, Rich, who are we honoring tonight? And I said, what? Who's a guest of honor? I said, Dean, we're doing the show in 3 minutes. You don't even know who we're roasting? Well, nobody told me. You know, I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is amazing. Was he really that soused? When he got on camera, he wasn't. It was all an act.
One time after we finished a roast, when everybody left, as I was leaving, I got a hold of Dean's cup, you know, and I took a sip out of it. And it was apple juice. It wasn't booze. It's not booze.
What
so that, that was a put on. Drinking.
Well,
he did drink. We know that, but I don't think he drank as much as we thought.
To the point. Yeah, but he really put that. And you know who else was hysterical? That I actually thought he was drinking. I'm like, well, maybe they did a little booze or something before they got on camera. You know, I'm sitting here like, well, what's going on?
Oh yeah, there were many performers who went on the roast who were pretty bummed at the time. And it's hard to tell, you know, because a lot of people can disguise that, you know, they can be bloated, but you don't really see it unless they're falling down. And I don't think Paul Lynn drank that much. Wait a minute. He did drink a lot, I think, because one time they had to strap him into this chair. One time after the lunch break, I think he was drinking, and we started to do the show, and they strapped him into the center square.
So you're holding him up so he wouldn't do like that?
Up. And, you know, even though he was strapped in and he was stoned out of his mind, he was still funny.
Sure.
Hey, guy.
I'm sure he was.
Yeah.
You know who else was funny? Foster Brooks was.
Oh, Foster Brooks.
Oh, he's a crack up. I had never really heard him do a comic routine. I just assumed.
Foster Brooks. You know, the thing about, you know, I think of all the roasts, I think he was the funniest. I think
he was
on the roast was Foster Brooks.
He was.
I don't remember him doing anything else but the roast. I think he did the Tonight Show a few times, but I only think of him on the roast. Foster Brooks, and he was the funniest of them all.
He was hysterical. He really was. He was funny. Nipsey Russell was funny when he got started. You know what I mean? And then, I don't know, I was thinking to myself, well, they certainly couldn't do any of those black and white jokes and some of the things they do today. In today's time, I think they get busted. But I thought it was funny the way they did them. It was not an intentional, like when Foster Brooks said something, he said, oh, and that's no disrespect to the color person. I thought it was Nipsey Russell said.
You know, I did more roast than anybody, and Nipsey Russell, I think, was second, then Don Rickles.
Don Rickles was hysterical.
He was funny, Nipsey Russell.
Red Button was funny. Red Button was funny.
Never got a dinner. Yeah. Yeah. He was great. Loved Red Buttons. Yeah.
And then I thought, Henry Fonda, now I wanted to talk to you about, I was told by the wonderful Harlan of Harlan PR, I was told on your packet, the bio, that you and were told to, who was it? You were told to fuck off by Bette Davis at the Reagan inauguration.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened? Why did she say that to you?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll make it simple. I was pretending to be Jimmy Stewart, and she didn't think it was funny at all, and she hung up, and she was furious. And then I phoned her back as Ronald Reagan, and she thought that was Rich Little, but it wasn't. It was me imitating Ronald Reagan, and she told me to fuck off.
How did you handle it?
True story. I can't believe I said that word on television, but okay.
Well, you can say it now. I asked the station owner before I started my show, what can I say? What can I do? And he said, you can do and say anything you want. I'm like, okay.
Really? I guess today you can almost say anything you want, huh?
You can say anything you want. They're not the same stipulation.
Well, you know, when you watch a movie, every second word is the F word, you know? And just think, when they made Gone with the Wind, it was a big controversy about him. Red Butler saying, I don't give a damn. You know, that was big.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
What about the song Physical that they made with Olivia Newton-John? I heard that was just so, they wanted to take it off the radio and not ever play it. I'm like, for somebody sing, let me see your body talk. I'm like, yeah. But on a lot of those movies, Rich, some of the dialogue in the old classic movies was off the chain. I mean, I'm like, they said that back in the day? They said some things that today would be considered to be like, whoa, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, what I notice about the old movies, and I love the black and white movies the past. They're my favorite movies. But have you ever noticed, in those movies, all they did was smoke. Everybody smoked.
I know.
These films. I'm not kidding you. I watched a movie with Robert Taylor the other night, and he smoked 14 cigarettes. I counted them in the movie. And just think, a lot of those people died, you know, from smoking. That's
really?
Humphrey Bogart. My God, there was a lot of people died of cancer from smoking. And that's all they did, you know, in those early movies was smoke.
Well, Jimmy Stewart, I never saw him smoke in a movie. I saw William Peck. I saw Humphrey Bogart, James Cagney.
Yeah. Well, Humphrey Bogart, you can't think of him without a cigarette in his hand, can you? I mean,
is that why his voice was deep?
You know, the thing about smoking in a movie is it's a great prop, you know, because you have something to do with your hands. Mm-hmm. And to take a drag on a cigarette, it made you look cool, you know, and that's why they smoked in movies. I think
it did look cool. Yeah. What about the guys like Humphrey Bogart? Was the deep voice because he smoked cigarettes, or that was just his
could
method?
Be, could be, you know, because he had a bit of a lisp, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
He kind of, all right, shut up and listen, fat man. I guess you thought I was going to play the patsy for you. Well, I play the sap for nobody. I do know this, Gutman. You had the weasel here call Mrs. McAdoo and told her to call Archer. And you tried to place the blame of his death on me.
Jimmy Stewart was...
You know something? I got to tell you this, and I've got...
I
put this in my show.
What?
Because the Review Journal here in Las Vegas about 20 years ago said that my best impression was Humphrey Bogart. And I went on the Body Human was the name of the show, and they had a machine that tested your voice. And they put my voice against the real Humphrey Bogart and to see if there's any difference. And there was a huge difference.
Oh, it was?
It didn't sound like there was, but the machine said there was a huge difference.
In what way? The tone, the way it's paraphrased? What made it? What?
Well, no, if you think about it, you know, I mean, I'm doing Humphrey Bogart in a studio, 30, 40 years later, and the acoustics could be different. He could have been outside. He could have been anywhere, you know. And so to get the sound the same is impossible. Impossible.
Mm-hmm. Well, out of all the roasts, first of all, let's go back. Let me go back. What happened between you and Johnny Carson? Because I watched you on the Johnny Carson show. Johnny Carson couldn't stand that you could imitate him. But every time he'd do something, you would do it like him. And he said, oh, man, you know, he was like trying to get away from it. What happened? It said that
there was a story that I did something on The Tonight Show that infuriated Johnny Carson. But, you know, last couple of weeks, I've been looking at old Johnny Carson shows that I was on. Uh-huh. And his reaction to me was fantastic. It was great. Great. So I don't think that was the problem. I think it was probably the producer, Freddie DeCordova. I think I upset him in some way. I never found out why, but it wasn't Johnny Carson. Because the last time I saw Johnny Carson was in a restaurant in Malibu. And this was near the end of his life. And he came up to me and he said, ah, Richard, are you still doing me? And I said, yes, really? They remember me? I said, John,
yes.
They will remember you for the next 100 years. And here we are after that meeting, like 40 years later, and I'm still doing Johnny Carson.
And everyone, I had a guest on my show a week ago, and I asked him, along with myself, who was your favorite interview host? And we both agreed as Johnny Carson.
Yeah,
I used to think he was so cool. You know, you're talking about little black kids in the TV. Who is that? You know, and I'm looking at the screen, and you have to understand that I really didn't get the humor of all of you until I got older. I just didn't understand what was going on. You're talking about somebody that, you know, is over 45, you know.
Right.
And so I'm like, well, what are they doing? And then when I watched all of the roast and I watched you on the interview with Carson, I laughed so hard because I got the comedy years later. When I was younger, I didn't understand what you were saying.
Well, Johnny Carson was interesting because there were two Johnny Carsons. There was the one on television, charming, witty, friendly, quick. I mean, he was the perfect host, or I mean, guest host. But in real life, Johnny Carson was totally different.
In what way?
I remember once going to a party where Johnny Carson was at the party. He sat in the corner and never talked to anybody. Mm-hmm. And I went up to him and I said, John, you don't seem to be talking to anybody. You know what he said to me? I've talked to everybody in the world. There's nobody left.
You know what? He was a Scorpio, too. They're private. You know, I know other people.
He was a
Scorpio. Yeah, he's a Scorpio. They're private like that. They don't really, you know, talk to too many people like that. They're not, you know, like, you know, the Aries and all these people, the air signs.
You know, he was married like I was 4 times. Johnny Carson was married 4 times. And at the last wedding, they threw minute rice.
Oh, wow. Wow.
He was married 4 times.
Why did he keep trying to get married?
I don't know. One of his wives, he would sit on the on his deck in Malibu, and one of his wives that he married just happened to be strolling by on the beach.
Oh my gosh.
And they got married. Yeah.
Wow. So do you think he really wanted the security of a relationship? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah.
Actually, my second wife would have been the one to last forever, but she passed away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So did you get married again?
I got married again. That was a mistake.
Okay. Then did you get married? So you're now married or not?
No, I'm not married now.
Okay.
I have no pets. I don't even have a goldfish.
Oh, I
don't have to look after anybody.
Yeah, that's kind of like how you want it.
Sounds sad, but I prefer it that way.
No, it's not sad. A lot of people are preferring. Number one, it's okay if somebody lives in their own place and you have your own space and you know that you both have strong personalities and that one is going to kowtow to the other one. And yeah. I think that's comfortable, but some people really do like having a bunch of people. I know people that their mom and dad and house. And they have no problem. Whereas for me, that would kill me. It would kill I couldn't handle. It's like, it's too much. I need my own thing. You know, you just probably the same way.
Yeah.
So what about the thing you're doing coming up on June 29th at the Tropicana? But before we talk about that.
Not the Tropicana.
It's at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah. At Covina.
In Covina. Yes. The Laugh Factory.
Laugh Factory in Vegas is gone. It's there's nothing there. They blew that up.
Really?
Yeah.
The Laugh Factory or the Tropicana?
They're putting a ballpark in there.
Yeah, you said it was the Tropicana. Is that what you, is it the Tropicana?
The Tropicana is no longer in Vegas. Okay. But I'm going to be performing in Covina at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah, that was my mistake. I inserted it.
You want to get tickets, go to their website. Be the best.
Okay.
And I'm coming out of retirement to do that show. I haven't been performing at all for the last year.
What are you doing to prepare yourself since you're coming out of retirement?
That's interesting. Sometimes preparing for a show is more fun for me than doing it because I go through a lot of my material, a lot of my jokes and say, that isn't very good. That could be better. And so I'm constantly working on my act all the time, every day.
Even though you've been doing it this long, you still work.
The interesting thing about comedy is sometimes you come across a joke and you think it's hysterical. You can't wait to tell it. And then you tell it on stage and nobody laughs.
Like my song that I sung this morning. I had it all in my head. I'm going to sing to the audience because people have been talking about their personal relationship.
Well, you needed
and then when I sing it.
You needed an orchestra. That's what
is
you
that
needed.
What it was?
Well, yeah. Hard to sing without an orchestra.
Or at least no, I was doing it. You can't do it. I would have gotten in trouble. And I hope Tracy Chapman don't come for me, you know, pick up arms and like I'm coming looking for some lady in L.A. trying to sing my song because somebody talked to her about their personal relationship. But listen, let's go back. When you were doing the Tropicana in Vegas, you got to perform with, let me get it right, Carol Channing,
yes.
Robert Goulet, who I loved,
right.
And the entire Rat Pack. Was that including Dean and Sammy and Frank, all of them together, or what did that involve?
No, I never performed with the Rat Pack.
Okay.
Because they came along before me. Mm-hmm. I never saw the Rat Pack, and I never worked with them. I worked with all of them individually, but I never worked
okay. with the Rat Pack. Okay, so you didn't work with them all together.
I worked with Sammy, I worked with Dean, and I worked with Frank, but not when they were together.
Together, oh. And so I never saw you do Sammy. On all the roads, I never saw you do Sammy.
May I say, man, I'm Sammy Davis Jr., whether I'm right, whether I'm wrong, oh, you know, he had that kind of...
But he was so cute. He was a little guy. Remember the roast? Yeah, he wasn't... I think it was only 5'6" or something.
Yeah. And I didn't get to know him that well, although every time I played Toronto, because I'm a Canadian, time I played the Royal York in Toronto, they would say to me, Rich, do you know Sammy? And I said, yeah. Well, he owes us $1,500.
Oh,
he never paid his bill. I said, well, don't look at me.
What about his managers and all those people? None of those people collected the money and took care of the bills and stuff?
You think so, but he owed a lot of money.
He probably was hard to deal with, too. Probably difficult. You know those people that have, they got all this creative talent. You wonder, is it worth putting the time and energy into them because they're so difficult to deal with, but they make all this money, so you got to kind of be bothered, you know.
Yeah, well, some of the richest people in show business are the cheapest, you know, except Jack Benny. Now, Jack Benny was known to be cheap, but in real life, he was quite generous.
Really?
I love Jack Benny. He was one of my favorite people that I knew because he had hardly any ego, and he was so damn friendly and interesting, and I just have great memories of Jack Benny. And George Burns, too.
And George Burns. I was going to say George. I met George Burns. I was at William Morris. That's where I did my training, William Morris Talent Agency. And there was a big, big car outside, and I was walking outside the door on a break. And I looked at the car, and I didn't see anybody. And I looked over in there, and he was a little bitty guy sitting down in this big old seat, and it was George Burns. And I said, hi, Mr. Burns.
Yeah, he was a very nice man. I remember a friend of mine that I was on radio with in Canada, and he came down to the States and did an interview with George Burns, and they talked for an hour. And then when the interview was over, he was testing the tape recorder, and it didn't record anything. It was blank.
Wow.
And George said to him, well, let's go back inside, and we'll do it over again.
That sounds just
they
like
did. An hour interview they did over again. And it was his idea. I mean, that's incredible.
Oh, he sounds like a nice, he was so nice. He waved. I was like, hi, Mr. Burns. He was sitting up in there. Listen, how was it? You didn't answer about working with Carol Channing and Robert Goulet.
Well, Carol Channing. Carol Channing reminded me of a person who had their finger in a light socket.
I'm laughing.
Carol Channing was larger than life.
She was.
When an entertainer is larger than life, they're usually very popular, like Jimmy Durante, Louis Armstrong. Yeah. And, you know, those people were Carol Channing. They were all larger than life. And people could identify with them very, very quickly. And, you know, it's funny. I remember one time Carol Channing, I was working with her at the Sands Hotel. And when the show was over, we were going over to Caesar's Palace to see an act. Okay. And as we're walking through the casino, somebody pointed at Carol Channing and said, are you with Lacage? My God, that you do a great Carol Channing. That's amazing. Who are you, fella? And Carol looked at me, she said, I'm a truck driver from Toledo.
Oh, my God.
I'm a truck driver from Toledo. That's funny.
But isn't it? It's a good thing that YouTube, I love YouTube. It's such a big research thing that you can literally go back and find out about things. And that's why at the beginning of the show, I brought up a thing about age. And the reason is that although you are at where you are, there are other people where we are. We all have to grow and get old and grow together. So just like we're getting older every day, everybody else is too. That's why I thought about it in that way. And then the other thing you want to think about is when I was young, and a lot of younger people are like this, I wasn't interested in young things. I was always around all these older people that had wisdom.
Me too.
And
me too.
So I was bored with young people. There are young people now. I ran into a kid, he got to be 25 years old. He's listening to music from the 40s and the 50s.
Yeah.
20 something years old. So that thing about age is some bull dookie that the media tries to throw on to people. And I'll tell everybody out there that is alive, if you live long enough and you're fortunate enough to live long enough, you're going to get old. So quit talking stupid. That's stupid. And it's unintelligent to mark people by age when everyone is going to get old and be in age if we live long enough. So we should be honoring the fact that we can age gracefully like you have, Rich, and that we can age and gain wisdom, and that our presence, not what you're wearing anymore and that you still look young and the wrinkles on your face, but your presence offers calm and it offers wisdom and it offers a safe space to people that are still young and out there trying to figure it out and all that stuff. That's what I have to say about the old thing. I don't believe in that. I never have. Because I've met too many people in my life all over the world that are young when they're old and old when they're young and all of these different things that the media doesn't say that. The media only does from one extreme to the other. You're the old or you're the blood. It's extreme. What's about all the other life that's in between those things? So I tend to treasure people like you. It is my great honor to have you on my show.
Well,
I want to talk to you about, you said you're coming out of retirement.
Yeah.
And I remember in one of the interviews, I think the interview hosting was Gatto, some show you were on. It wasn't even that long ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, I think. And he asked you, was there anyone in modern day time that you felt that you would want to do an impression? And you said no, that their voices weren't unique enough. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, if you have a lisp, Humphrey Bogart, or, you know, if something to grab onto when you do the impression, it's easier to do, you know. With Dean Martin, you just got to pretend that you're drunk, you know. I remember I had a 15-year-old in my audience one time, and he thought my best impression was the drunk. And I said, the drunk? Who's that? And it turned out it was Dean Martin. They only knew him as a drunk.
But he laughed.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Dean was a lot like Johnny Carson. He kind of quiet and not too exciting as off camera, you know?
Okay, who, Dean?
Yeah, I remember a driver that used to drive Dean Martin said to me, you ever go over to Dean Martin's house? And I said, no. I've never been invited. Well, you should go by because nobody comes by. And he sits there alone. And he would love it if you went over to his house. He would absolutely love it. And I said, really? Yeah, just drop by. Because nobody comes to visit him. And he just sits in his living room watching Westerns, and then he plays golf in the morning, and that's his day. And I thought about that, but then I thought later, well, I would drop by his house, but I don't even know where he lives. And isn't that interesting? He didn't have any friends.
Who, Dean didn't?
No, not really.
Why?
We know it wasn't Jerry Lewis, but Frank Sinatra was his friend, but I think most of the friendship with Frank Sinatra was on stage. I don't think they socialized.
So I'm sure a lot of people want to know this. See, you guys, when you get to talk to people like this, this is the kind of stuff you learn that you're not going to find out unless you talk to them or know them or hear them somewhere. And it is very interesting, and I'm perplexed by the fact that we sit up every day. I've noticed this. I remember when I worked at a job in corporate America one time, and everybody's all, hi, girl, and hey, and blah, blah, I'm your honey and your baby, and blah, blah. And then you get fired or leave the job or you go on to something else like you guys, all of you do in entertainment. And it's so shallow. That is so shallow that all of those people that you meet and greet and talk to, and you don't have one person that's a real person around you that you can open up and say, I'm hurting inside. I'm lonely. I'm tired. I don't want to do the show, but I'm going to do it anyway. That is sad. That's sad. That shows me how shallow entertainment is, more shallow than I thought it was. It's shallow.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, poor baby. Yeah. I'd have been his friend. Like, hey, I'm just checking on you. You know, I don't need anything. I don't want anything. I'm just checking on. Say hi. See how you're doing. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wasn't in any kind of relationship or anything like that.
Who?
Dean.
Oh, Dean. Well, I don't know. He was married a number of times, but
he was married.
I don't think he was. Was he married when he passed away? I'm not.
Probably not.
I mean, he still saw Jeannie a lot, you know, and I think he was with her just before he passed away.
Who's Jeannie?
That was his second wife.
Okay. Wow. So let's back it up a little bit. You happened to go to an event. I can't remember what it was because I watched on the interview, and you saw John Wayne dressed up as a bunny rabbit or something.
Bunny rabbit, yeah. Yeah.
You told him, you said, oh, yeah. And you started doing him. You said, oh, yeah, do I walk like that? Talk about that, how it felt.
Yeah, that's true.
A legend like John Wayne.
I was doing a situation comedy at Screen Gems. And next door at the studio next door, they were doing Laugh-In. Mm-hmm. So on a break, I went over to that studio to see if John Wayne was there because I heard he was going to be a guest on the show. And I walked in, and there was John Wayne in a bunny outfit, mm-mm, which was pretty funny to look at. John Wayne dressed up as a bunny.
Such a man.
And I just stood there for a while, and nobody was doing anything. And I finally was going to leave. And John Wayne said, hold on there, little. Get over here, mister. And I walked over to him, and he said, don't you leave this studio without showing me how I do my walk. I'm losing it. I said, what? My walk. Do my walk for me. So I walked the whole length of the studio and back as John Wayne. And he was looking at me very carefully. And when I got back, he looked at me and said, my God, I've been walking like Loretta Young for 50 years. That's a true story.
And you wait a minute, because on screen, these people seem so tough. And so, you know, I'm such a man. You know, back in those days, you wouldn't dare show any kind of softness or anything about, you know, unless you were Paul Lindy, somebody like that. You know, but you, and for him to be in a Rabbit's outfit.
Yeah.
On top of saying he walked like Loretta Young. I'm like, I never really paid any attention to how Loretta Young walked. That's too funny. Who out of all of the people you worked with, met, encountered, had some wonderful moments that, you know, you'll take with you after this life? Who was one of your favorites?
Probably Ronald Reagan.
Really? Why?
Well, because he loved humor. Hmm. And every time I saw Ronald Reagan, and I saw him quite a bit, he would tell me a joke.
Really?
And he loved to tell jokes. And the last time I saw Ronald Reagan, he was speaking at some dinner somewhere in Hollywood. And all he did was tell jokes. That's all he did. Told about 12 jokes, one after the other. And then he sat down. That was it. He loved humor. And he did a few impressions, too. Ronald Reagan did an impression of Truman Capote.
Can we hear Truman Capote? How did he sound?
Reagan said to me, "Rich, I love to do Truman Capote, but I don't know what to say." And I gave him a joke, and he wrote it down, too.
Mm-hmm. I said, "Listen, my name is Truman Capote, and, you know, a lot of people think that I wrote in cold blood, but that's not true. I wrote in ink."
And Reagan loved that joke. He wrote it down, and he put it in his pocket, and then he said to me, "I can't wait to try that out on Gorbachev." Can you imagine Reagan doing comedy for Gorbachev? That would be hysterical.
It's hysterical, but that's what made it funny, is that you get to see these people out of character, because I didn't know Ronald Reagan even did anything but was an actor. So it's a lot of them that have these other talents that you get to see over time, because after a while, like, yeah, well, did you know I can sing and dance and play the piano and things like that? I guess so. There's different parts of the talent that gets pulled out as one gets.
When I imitated Ronald Reagan at his first inauguration, and I put this in my show because I never saw a man laugh as hard in my life as he did. He was screaming with laughter. And almost to the point where he was falling on the floor. So he loved my impression of him. Mm-hmm. Loved it. And I have great memories of Ronald Reagan.
No. Everybody said he was kind of cool. Everybody that I know, that I have a friend that really was into him when he was a president, he said he was kind of cool. I'm like, well, you know, he was an Aquarian. He probably was a little different, a little unconventional.
Yeah.
But I've got to do another commercial break for our wonderful sponsor, and then we'll be right back. Okay. Kevin Pye Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508, Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist. Kevin Pye has his cute little face. He's a nice little guy. You love him if you met him and knew him. He knows everything about real estate, and he will not blow smoke up your tootie. He knows everything about how to get in, how to get out, everything. So you can feel free to call him at any time. 818-571-1508. And now back to you, Mr. Little. So what was the show, out of all the things you did, did you enjoy doing the roast more or your individual sets?
No, the show I enjoyed doing the most was the Julie Andrews Show.
Oh.
And I was a regular on that show. I did all but two of her shows. And that was the most fun for me, because Julie was mostly a singer. And I did a lot of comedy on that show. And that was the most fun I think I ever had on a television show, was the Julie Andrews Show.
Didn't Judy Garland kind of discover you because you were on her TV show?
Yeah.
That's how you got discovered? What happened? Tell us a little bit about that, because we're getting short on time.
Mel Torme, the singer, got me on the Judy Garland Show. And we had done a variety show in Toronto, Mel Torme and I. And he put a lot of my impressions on a tape. And then he brought it over to Judy Garland when he got back to Hollywood and said, "I want you to hear this guy. He's an impersonator from Canada. And I think you'll like him and book him on your show." And Judy looked at Mel and said, "Don't play me the tape. I don't like impersonators. They make me fart." That's what Judy said. That little girl from Kansas said that. And so Mel said, "Oh, really? Well, just hear him do one impression. I'll just play one for you." And of course, he put on the impression of James Mason. And James Mason and Judy Garland had done a movie called A Star Is Born. And that's how I got on the Garland Show, was my impression of James Mason. And it's interesting because a couple of months after doing the Garland Show, I saw James Mason at a fundraiser in Hollywood, and I went up to him and I said, "Mr. Mason, I would just like to thank you." And he said, "What on earth for?" And I said, "For getting me on the Judy Garland Show." "I don't know what you're talking about." I said, "I do an impression of you. Judy Garland loved it so much, she put me on her show." And then James Mason looked at me and said, "How much did you get for doing the show?" I said, $1,400. "Why?" "Well, send half of it to me."
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
Which I never did. But
I know you didn't. I go, "Are you kidding?"
No, where was I going to send it? I had no address, so that's funny. Send half of it to me because I imitated him on the Garland Show. That's funny.
That is funny. What about Orson Welles? How was he?
Orson, I did a movie with Orson Welles called The Other Side of the Wind was the name of the movie. And if you see it, it's around somewhere. I'm not in it because I had to leave in the middle of shooting the movie because I had a club date I couldn't get out of. So I was replaced by Peter Bogdanovich, and I'm not in the movie. But I loved Orson. Orson was great.
He seemed very great.
Very down to earth, and you could make suggestions to Orson Welles, and he loved it, you know. And I remember every time he was going to tell me how to do something, he would start to stand up, and I thought, no, don't get up, Orson. That's going to take 10 minutes.
You know? He was a big guy.
And he never tied his shoelaces. So I thought, if he does stand up, he's going to trip on his shoelaces. And so I used to say something to Orson Welles, and then I'd say, don't get up, just sit there. And he took suggestions. He loved it, you know. One time, one of the guy that sweeps out the studio made a suggestion, and Orson loved it so much, he put it in the movie.
Oh, you know, I'm just so happy we can go back and I can visit these people and say hi. Like, I never knew you, but I'm glad I can see you years later. Rich, we got to go. But what I want you to do again, Rich Little, the one and only, better get him while he's around. One and only at the Laugh Factory in Covina. I think it's something Citrus Avenue is the address. I can't think of the number. But it's in Covina. It's June 29th this month. The man will be, the legend will be live at the Laugh Factory.
Come and see me before I pass away, because once I'm dead, you don't want to see me.
No, they're going to be watching you more.
I wouldn't look too good then, you know? So come and see me now while I'm still alive and have my memory is, that's why I don't do Joe Biden. It's because I have a memory.
Oh, and you know what? I think the jokes about him now I don't like because he's sick now. He's going to end.
You know, did you hear the other day, and it was a joke of mine, actually. Joe Biden walked into a closet at home and couldn't find his way out. Did you hear about that? And that's a joke I used to use. Joe Biden walked into his closet and said, "Down, please."
You should.
Anyway.
Are you going? Are you looking forward to coming out of retirement after the Laugh Factory Day? Because we got to go.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. So everyone out there, it's been wonderful. Look who we have. We have Rich Little. Look, I'm so happy that we had you. Thank you. I feel like I want to hug you from afar, so you'll feel it. I'm very strong. My energy. And good luck to you on the Laugh. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Great fun talking to you.
Good luck to you on the Laugh Factory date. We're going to love you whether you're here, not here. You will forever be known. Trust me, my friend. No one is ever going to forget who you are because we don't have anybody that can do all of that kind of stuff anymore. There are very few people. I think Jamie Foxx is really good. I don't know too many people that can do all of the impressions. I didn't even know Sammy Davis Jr. could do impressions. But in order to find out more, go on to Rich. Do you have a website?
Yep.
Richlittle.com.
Yep.
Richlittle.com. If you want to find out more about what he's doing, any of you out there that need to take notes, I would suggest that if you think you're going to be a stand-up or whatever this man is doing that he's a pro at, to take notes and get it down because it is a definitely talent. Don't forget about me to go on 15 Minutes to Show YouTube and also Osiris_Munir_the painter on IG. My name is all across the internet. All you do is look for me, Google my name. And I like you because you are wonderful human beings such as this gentleman is on my show.
Thank you.
And I love you because you consistently show up for what you want to do in this world. And that's hard to do. We will see you next time. Don't forget to smile. Okay. It works wonders. And thank you again. Mwah.
Okay.
Mwah. Nice. Mwah. I love you. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
You made my day and my week, to be honest with you. And good luck to your show on your show. Don't forget, Laugh Factory, West Covina, California, June 29th. Rich Little, live and in person. Talk to you soon. Love you. Bye-bye. Okay. Don't forget to smile.
You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.